if you are going to therapy and you're not feeling comfortable with who you've been currently working with, and even if it's been a long time, it's okay to find someone else. It's okay to start over. You know, and really therapy, you know, shouldn't last forever. And it's hard, you know, it's hard for both parties. There are some people, you know, I've worked with for years and, you know, it's like, I would be very sad to see them go, but I also know that that has to happen at some point. Welcome to the Mama Shrink Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cynthia Hauver, licensed psychologist, certified coach, and Gen X mama of two amazing boys. My belief, you can't be an awesome mama unless you're taking care of yourself first. And that's exactly why I created Mama Shrink. You'll get my 20 plus years of experience combined with some very real life struggles. And together we'll unpack the mental health, the physical health, even spiritual health, to get you loving your mama life again. Listen, these kids of ours, they're only young once, and it goes by so fast, and you're never, ever gonna get this time back. We must learn to enjoy this wild ride of parenting. So, if you're up for it, mama, let's do this. Hey, mamas, before we jump into today's episode, I just want to remind you that although I am a licensed psychologist, I'm not serving here as your psychologist. This podcast is not a substitute for direct mental health care. If you're struggling with a mental health issue of any kind, please reach out to a licensed professional. You can also contact the National Suicide Crisis Line by calling or texting 988. There's no shame in having a mental health issue, and it should always be taken seriously. Welcome back, mamas, to another episode of Mama Shrink. I'm Dr. Cynthia Hauver, clinical psychologist turned online coach for busy, high-functioning moms. So today, I realized that an important topic that I haven't really addressed is about finding good therapy. You know, this is something that obviously is very important and near and dear to my heart because I am a psychologist. I do have a brick and mortar psychology practice. You know, when I work with my clients online, I'm doing that in a coaching capacity in my one-on-one work with the moms that I work with. But that is different from doing therapy. So I figured I would actually kind of make this a two-part thing, whereas today I'm going to talk about what you need to kind of look for and want between good therapy and bad therapy, and finding a good therapist, knowing if maybe you're not seeing a good therapist. And next episode, I'm going to talk about the difference between therapy and coaching, because I think that's also something that can get kind of murky and the lines aren't clear. And I think it's an important topic to address, especially for moms who are listening, who are trying to decide between, you know, should I be going to therapy or do I need a coach? And where am I at this particular place in my life? Like, which would serve me better? And so since I've done both, I can speak to that. So for today's episode, let's talk about finding a good therapist. You know, really hard, unfortunately. I think there are wonderful, wonderful therapists out there, but there's also some that are not that great. And, you know, what I hear a lot from people, like, if I look at over the course of my career so far, if someone comes to see me and they've seen someone else, I always say, well, why did that therapy relationship end? What was the reason for it? And I always like to ask them that because I want to, number one, know, okay, well, what's not working? What have they experienced that may have been a really bad therapy experience that I'm going to have to really, you know, correct for. And also, you know, why maybe they continued to go for as long as they did and didn't see any results. Because a lot of times, you know, people will just continue going to the same therapist because they get comfortable, but they're not really finding that they're having any change. Now, that's also twofold, and I always keep this in my mind as well, which is, you know, how much is the client working in the session and between sessions, you know, because there is sometimes a belief, and I think it's important as the therapist, which is also part of being a good therapist, is to educate people on what therapy is, you know. So, you know, yes, it's a place where you come in and you're supported and it's confidential and you can pretty much talk about anything that you need to. But I think we also need to let people know that, you know, therapy isn't something that should last forever, that the goal is to get the person functioning again and to find relationships outside of the therapy session that serve them, to not keep them coming forever, and to find ways for them to improve. And depending on what the person's dealing with, you know, that can vary. It really does. You know, if I'm working with someone with an eating disorder, I've had clients, you know, that I've worked with for 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10 years. And sometimes I'll have an eating disorder client that I work with for 1 year or 2 years. But, you know, that's a really serious, in-depth, usually complex relationship. And there's usually a lot behind that. And, you know, there's other disorders. Like if we're talking about someone that has a personality disorder, I mean, they may be in therapy for many, many years. So really, you know, you have to look at where the person's at. But the most important thing is that you want your clients to feel like they're getting something from their sessions with you. And you, as the consumer, need to feel that way too. And I'll try and throw in a little bit, since, you know, this is a podcast for moms, like, what do you look for also when you want to take your child to therapy or you're calling to schedule something for your child, and some questions that you should be asking to make sure your child's going to get the proper treatment. So before I go into like what's good therapy, what's bad therapy, I just want to explain a little bit about what qualifies someone to be a therapist and the differences, because this is often something that gets murky in the world of therapy as well, where people often don't, you know, a layperson probably doesn't understand what are the differences in training. So when we look at psychiatry, someone who is a psychiatrist, they have gone to medical school and then they spend 5 years, usually around 5 years in residency, specializing in psychiatry and prescribing medication. Now, they do get training sometimes in therapy, but their prime training is usually in medication, how to prescribe medications, and usually they have a lot of training in very severe pathology. So if they're running an inpatient psychiatric unit, something like that, that's kind of where their training lies. So it's more from a medical standpoint. Now, there are psychiatrists who have gone on and had additional training in therapy or psychoanalytic training. A lot of people aren't getting psychoanalytic training as much anymore, because I don't think a lot of people have years to spend and go to therapy 3 times a week for psychoanalysis. It's just not something that's culture-based, but there are still people who practice psychoanalytic therapy, and there are, you know, some psychiatrists that do that. So that's more of the psychiatry field. Then we have the psychology field, which is what I am. So to be a clinical psychologist, you have gone to school for undergrad, graduated from undergrad, and then you go on to a doctoral psychology program for 5 years. So you get 4 years of training and then 1 full year of internship. where you're primarily being supervised and doing, you know, therapy assessments, whatever your focus is for a full year, like a full-time job. And then we have to then do a year of at least 1 year of postdoc, doctoral supervised work before we can even sit to become licensed to practice independently. So, you know, we're talking about 11 years of education on top of high school. So it does take quite a while throughout the training. It depends on what type of program you go to. So there are PhD programs that are more research-based, where you're learning how to do research, perhaps work in a university setting, and also getting clinical experience mixed in with that. And then my degree, a PsyD, was more clinically focused, and both a PhD and a PsyD were trained heavily also in assessments. So we administer psychological testing and learn how to interpret the data. A PsyD program, the reason I chose that is because I enjoyed doing more of the clinical piece rather than the research piece. But both a PsyD and PhD, we also have to do a doctoral dissertation, which is pretty much like writing a book in order to graduate. So that's another component of it. So there's a lot that goes into it. Every year, at least in my doctoral program, we had practicum placements where we did anywhere from 15 to 20 hours of clinical work along with our schooling. And many of us had jobs on the side where we would get additional clinical work and training. So, you know, I had formal practicums with, you know, I'm lucky to say great supervision. And then I also had jobs on the side where I've worked in, you know, in the ER facility at a hospital. I've worked in a learning disability center doing assessments. I worked for a private practice psychologist doing assessments. So lots of different stuff. But all, you know, the training is very important. So getting the coursework. But the other thing to remember is hopefully getting good supervision. Because what can happen is there's a lot of people that can, you know, even go get their doctoral degree, but if they haven't had a variety of settings, they haven't had good supervision, they haven't been videotaped, they haven't gotten a lot of good feedback, you are also going to be the consumer of that. So it's really important. And this is one of the things I'll recommend is, you know, ask someone about their training and their supervision, because those are important things to know. And then there are licensed social workers who they go to school for 4 years and they get their, now I might not have this 100% correct because this isn't my field, but they get their master's degree, which is usually about 2 years, and then they have to do supervised clinical work on top of that. And then they can sit first for their LSW and then their licensed clinical social worker exam. I'm not quite sure on the timelines specifically for all of that, but they do have a lot of training if they're taking the clinical route towards, you know, doing therapy and being very intense in their focus on learning how to do therapy. So even though sometimes people say, well, it's social work, if you're going the clinical track of social work, they are very highly trained in doing therapy and having lots of supervised practicum experiences doing that. And then in Pennsylvania, now this doesn't exist in all states, but in Pennsylvania, we have a master's of counseling degree where people, again, go to school for their bachelor's. Then they go on to get their master's in counseling, and then they have to do a certain amount of supervised clinical hours after they graduate before they can practice independently. So they too are getting a lot of clinical training and experience and supervision. And, you know, in the state of Pennsylvania, once you have your licensed professional counselor degree, you are allowed to practice independently as well. That differs by states. When I was in Ohio doing my doctoral degree, the only people at that time, I believe, that could practice independently were clinical psychologists and licensed clinical social workers. But all of them, you know, are going through lots of training, courses, supervision, all of that. So, you know, there's differences in all of the training. But really, you know, I always say too, like, there's a fundamental thing of you can go to the best programs, you can be the smartest person in the room, you can have the best degrees. But when it comes to being a therapist, you really have to have compassion and empathy. And unfortunately, you know, you either have it or you don't. So sometimes, you know, people can get through all of this training and they just don't have that. So if you've ever been to therapy and you feel kind of like, oh, this person, I just don't connect with them, or they don't get me, or I don't understand this, you know, that's a big sign of your intuition to say, okay, this isn't the right fit for me. So I guess I'll start by talking about what's not good during therapy and like red flags to look for, because, you know, it's important, I think, for people to talk about this and know this, because, you know, you seek out therapy to talk about very vulnerable things, you know, so a lot of times you're entrusting yourself with sharing very, very personal details about your life, and you want to feel safe. You want to feel supported and understood and feel like the person sitting on the other side is getting you. So that would be my first and foremost thing, is if you do not feel safe and comfortable, then you need to find another therapist. And it can be hard to say, okay, I don't want to go back, or I have to tell this story again. But trust me, it is better to start over than to continue therapy when you don't feel safe or supported. You also want to feel heard. You want to feel like the person is listening to you, like, you know, you are the most important thing in that session, you know. And sometimes, you know, when I'm doing an intake session and a meeting with someone for the first time, I spend a lot of time taking notes because there's a lot of information I have to gather about the person. And then usually, as you know, a couple of sessions go by, I am not a note taker during sessions. So I usually, you know, am someone who just sits and tries to be there with my client. And, you know, even if you are a therapist that's taking notes, you still want to be engaged. You want to be giving, you know, feedback and not just feeling like they're repeating things back to you. I mean, you actually want to feel heard. I think it's important to feel like your therapist likes you. And I don't think this gets talked about a lot, but I think, you know, that your therapist looks forward to seeing you and you can feel that somehow. I do think that's important. If you leave a session feeling embarrassed or shame comes up for you, then you probably should not go back, because that's not what therapy is. You don't want to feel like you're leaving feeling embarrassed or shameful, because, you know, that's crossing a boundary. Now, do you sometimes leave therapy feeling worse than when you went in? Absolutely. But that's not the same thing as feeling embarrassed or feeling shameful. Sometimes, you know, we talk about really hard stuff and we have a limited amount of time to do that. And at first, when I first became a therapist, I would want to go over session time and just stay there with the person until they felt better. But as I became more experienced, I realized that, you know, that container, whether some people, you know, do a 50-minute session, 55-minute, 60-minute, that's the average, sometimes 45-minute. But it's important to have those boundaries. So, you know, the therapist needs to have those boundaries of the time and managing it and being okay that, you know, someone's leaving, and you don't want them leaving suicidal or completely unable to handle their emotions. But, you know, letting people leave, and if they're still hurting a little bit, letting them leave and feel that, and that's okay. And to explain that, you know, you want your therapist to be saying, you know, sometimes you're going to leave and you might not feel that great for a little bit, but that's okay, because we're talking about really hard stuff. And, you know, it's okay to have your feelings. You want to make sure that progress is being made. So is it helping you? You know, do you feel over time that it's doing something to serve you and help you get better? And again, this is twofold. So you can't just put it on the therapist to say, make me better. And a lot of times, you know, that's a real struggle for therapists is, you know, like, you know, we have a common thing where it's like, oh, we can't just wave a magic wand and make you better. And trust me, like, we would love to do that. That would be wonderful, but that's just not possible. And therapy takes time. It's a process. So you have to be patient, but you also want to feel as though you are making some progress, you know, and even if it's little changes, that you're working towards a goal, that things are changing, or it's somehow making your life better, and you can see how that's happening. You want someone that is going to challenge you a little bit. You know, I would say, you know, this is probably more where my coaching comes in, but I do challenge my clients. I am a little bit more directive in my therapy style and challenge them on hard things and, you know, kind of push them a little bit. But I think it's important to do so because that's where change is going to take place. And sometimes change isn't always comfortable. You want to make sure your therapist is professional, that they are, you know, getting back to you in a timely fashion, that they're not, you know, always like changing your appointment around or canceling. Now, you know, as I'm saying that, I'm like, oh my God, this winter I've canceled probably more clients than I've ever cared to. I mean, we all get sick. We all have, you know, health issues or our kids get sick. But for the most part, you want to feel like your therapist is going to be there at a set time when they say and is going to show up. You know, that's really, really imperative. And you don't want your therapist to seem anxious or distracted or uncomfortable, and that they're approachable, that you are feeling completely supported in that room, that you feel if you cry, it's okay. If you have anger, it's okay. If you share something really, really hard, it's okay. And you also don't want to feel like you have to take care of your therapist. And I'm saying this because, unfortunately, I've had people come to see me where that's been told to me, where they almost felt like, you know, they were being the therapist, where they had to, you know, check in with their therapist and felt like they were in the reverse role, which should never be happening. You know, it's not your job to leave that session feeling like you did a therapy session, number one, or number two, where you feel like, oh gosh, like, are they going to be okay with what I told them? Because here's the thing, and this is like a little inside psychology thing. Like, yes, it is hard to be a psychologist and for people to be therapists, because we do hear a lot of hard stuff. There's no doubt about it. But we're trained to do this. And we're also trained, you know, whether it's through experience or supervision or just working through things ourselves, to leave our client's stuff hopefully at the office, you know, or wherever the session is. I mean, you really have to be able to let that go. And, you know, I've seen sometimes where I've seen clients where I think maybe they have gone to a therapist where those lines were getting blurred, and also feeling like what they had to say, like their therapist couldn't handle it. So, you know, a good therapist, we can handle hearing hard stuff. And I have heard some of the hardest, most horrific things, but I've learned also that I found a way to compartmentalize it, you know, and it's just kind of like we have to. That's part of our job. But you also don't want to become hardened. So it's a very fine balance. And this kind of goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. Your therapist should never touch you. Your therapist should never cross a boundary where you feel like they are being sexual towards you or wanting you to be their friend. That's absolute no-no. And I guess still in this day and age, I have to mention that because the number one male practice suit still is people touching their clients or having sex with their clients. should never, ever, ever happen. Or, you know, your therapist calling you or wanting more from you, like between sessions, like that's just not normal behavior, you know? So, and trust me, I know it's happened because I've seen people that have come to see me and tell me it's happened. So it's just something that I'm blatantly putting out there. Like, you cannot be friends with your therapist and you should not be romantically involved with your therapist. There should be none of that in the room. And if you're even feeling slightly like that's happening, then you need to go somewhere else. And you also should probably consider reporting that person to their state licensing board, because that should never, ever, ever happen. So those are the big things about a therapist that's maybe not a good fit. Now I'm going to spend some time just talking a little bit about what you should look for in a therapist and what would be a good fit for you. So when you're looking for, you know, a therapist, it is a vulnerable thing. And I think, you know, doing your research, looking up their website, looking up their training, you know, they have a picture online, you know, just feeling it out, just feel if it's a good fit for you. I think it's always important, if you can, to ask other people what they've heard about the person or the practice that the person's working at, because word of mouth, I still think, is very, very valuable in the therapy world, you know. And I don't know how much this will all change as, you know, we're doing more telehealth and teletherapy, and some insurances cover it and some don't. And, you know, right now as a psychologist, like, we're not allowed to practice across state lines and certain insurances don't allow us to do teletherapy, but it may be harder to get that word of mouth referral. But, you know, I think therapy is becoming much more acceptable and people are open to it, you know, and I have a lot of people that come to me and just say, hey, who would you recommend? Which I'm fine helping people find someone good. And so if you know someone who's a therapist, you could always ask them. So really, you know, doing your homework, you can look on Psychology Today. If you are using your insurance, you may want to go to your insurance provider, look up online to see who's covered, and then narrow it down by that. You know, it is often sometimes hard to get in with someone, and there might be a wait list. And if you're really in crisis, then I recommend, you know, not being put on a wait list. But if you're pretty sure, like, no, I want to wait and see this person, I think, you know, asking to be put on a wait list. And, you know, you have to understand that it's also hard on the receiving end. Like, there are people who contact me all the time, and I'm not saying this to toot my own horn, and I hate having to tell someone I don't have an opening, or, you know, evenings are often like a prime time where people want to come in, and a lot of people have their evenings booked first. And, you know, so sometimes it is really hard when you call somewhere and they're like, no, we're full, I'm sorry. But if that happens, you know, always ask, is there somewhere else you would recommend, or someone else that you work with that you would feel comfortable sending me to? If you're dealing with a particular issue, I would research that, you know. So if you have an eating disorder, you want to go to someone who specializes in eating disorders. You know, you don't want to just go to someone who does not have the experience or training in that field. There's very specific things, you know, like if you're dealing with depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, things like that, like, most of us as therapists have been trained in that. But if you're really looking for something more specific that you're dealing with, then look to see if that therapist has training in that. Because, you know, you don't want someone who's just dabbled in that a little bit. Now, I think it's always good too if they have someone that they're training in, you know, like, I have therapists that work for me, and I will give them eating disorder clients and provide supervision to them. So, you know, I think it's also good that other people are getting a chance to learn. So you just want to make sure that they know, like, if you're going for couples therapy, make sure the person works with couples. If you need family therapy, make sure they do family therapy. If you're going for trauma, make sure that they have experience working with trauma. if you are, you know, going for, or you're looking for your child, make sure they have experience working with children. You know, some people will work with children and they haven't been trained to work with children. And working with children is a whole different ballgame than working with adults. And I think therapists are usually pretty clear on they either like to work with kids or they don't, you know, and just because someone works with adults doesn't mean they also don't work with kids. Some people solely work with kids, but people, hopefully, as a therapist, you kind of know, do I like working with, you know, young children? Do I only want to work with adolescents? Do I want to work with young adults? You know, so it's okay to look the person up. It's okay to ask them questions. And also thinking about your therapeutic, you know, what kind of style they have. So, you know, on my website, I put down that, you know, we focus on positive psychology, that we really look at the person as, you know, from a holistic perspective. So kind of going back to when things may have first started, but trying to move towards change. So, you know, we're more, the therapists that work for me and myself are more eclectic in the sense that we're going to kind of fit the therapy that feels best for that client versus trying to put the client in a box for that specific therapy style. But, you know, some people are very trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, which is changing the way you think, changes the way you feel. They're going to be much more structured. Some people are more interpersonal and are really going to look at the relationship and the relationship in the room. Some people are very psychodynamic and they look at the past and how that past influences the current functioning of the person. So there's all different schools of thought. So look at what someone writes in their write-up, you know, and I think we do have the advantage now that we have the internet to look people up and to see if they feel like they're going to be a good fit with what their orientation is. You know, if you are looking for someone who's more spiritually based, you know, I'm not talking religion, I'm talking spiritual, you know, it's okay to ask that, you know, like, are you open to discussing stuff about spirituality? I think people see that I do hypnosis, so they kind of know that I am a little bit more on the woo-woo side. So I think it's kind of a given. But also knowing that I, if someone comes in and is not wanting to talk about any of that, I'm not pushing that on them, you know, so you, that needs to be made clear too. And you can ask those questions. So just some other important things is, again, you want to make sure that your personality fits with the person. So yes, there's, you want to make sure they're trained. You want to make sure they've had good training, that, you know, they have a good reputation, but you also want to make sure that it just feels good. You know, it just feels like you connect with that person, because all the training, all the therapy in the world, if you don't feel safe in that room or you don't feel connected to that person, it's not going to make a difference. So that's super, super important. You want to see that you're getting some type of result. And again, in therapy, you know, I think it does take time. It's a lot more of a lengthy process than doing something like coaching. But usually people are coming to therapy because they have a lot of stuff in their life that they've had to deal with. And so, yes, it might take more time, but you want to feel like, okay, I'm making progress. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. But again, I think that's also doing your part, you know. So if a therapist is saying, you know, I want you to read this book, I think this will help you between sessions, or I want you to journal, or I want you to, you know, work on this worksheet, or, you know, do something between a session, or take this risk, you know, you got to participate and do it. So it can't just be, you know, again, waving a magic wand and making things happen. You want to feel like their feedback is practical, but also emotionally in tune with what you're dealing with. So if they are giving feedback, does that fit? Does that feel comfortable? How do they react if you say, no, that's not really how I'm feeling? You know, do they get defensive, or are they like, oh, okay, well, tell me how you're feeling? Because I think that's super important. I, you know, hey, I've been wrong before where I've thought like, hey, do you think this is going on for you? And my client has said, no, I don't think that's it. I'm certainly not going to be like, are you sure? You know, it's like, no, I'm going to listen to what they're feeling and thinking. Now, if I'm really thinking like, okay, well, I don't know, I might shelve that and address it in a different time. Okay, but not in that moment. So you want to feel seen and heard. You know, the person I hope is empathetic. I hope the therapist is empathetic. So they should try to understand. Now, by empathy, I mean understanding what it's like to be in your shoes. Now, no one can truly know what it's like to live another person's life unless you've lived it. But you want someone who you feel like gets you, that you really feel like, yeah, they understand what I've been through. Because if they don't, you know, you're not going to go deeper. It's going to be very superficial and it's probably not going to be effective. You want a therapist who wants to understand what you're looking for and what you want to accomplish. So even in that very first session, like saying, you know, like hopefully the therapist says to you, so what do you hope to gain by coming in here and working together? You know, where would you like to see yourself? What are your goals? So no matter what orientation, we're always trying to work towards helping the person get better and feel better. You want to feel like they're listening. And so you want to make sure that you're hearing things back to you, that they remember what you talked about from the week before, you know, that they're not sitting there like blank face, not remembering your story. I mean, that stuff is not good. You want to feel like you understand what they're saying. So you don't want to have a therapist who you feel like is talking over your head or talking down to you. You want to obviously feel like they're interested in what you're saying and want to help you. And if you're having certain symptoms, that you can bring them up and that you feel comfortable asking the therapist, like, what do you think about this? What do you think's happening? Being able to ask if, you know, they think medication would be effective. If you want them to be connected with your primary care physician, you know, feeling comfortable enough to ask that and to coordinate care for you. You want them to check in on your progress. And you really want to feel too like they believe in you, that they believe you can change. So that's like really like important. Like if I'm going to therapy, I want to feel like my therapist believes I can get better. Yeah, I think that's really, really important, and not feel, you know, like they're like, oh God, here we go again, same old, same old. You want to make sure they're keeping up with new treatments, new evidence, that they're doing continuing ed. Most of us are because, you know, we're mandated to, but in states where you're not, you really want to make sure that therapists are up to date in their training and their education. You want to feel safe in their office. So, you know, you really want to feel like people can't hear outside the room. You know, like we try really hard to like have sound machines and different things that we have in our office so the people feel like no one next to them in the next room can hear them. You know, so different things to keep privacy. You want to feel like your records are remaining private. You really want someone who is going to, you're going to just feel like they have your back, you know, and if you're having a crisis that you know what to do and who to reach out for and, you know, just feeling all around supported, you know, and, you know, some of the best therapists that, you know, I am that, and I am open about talking about how I've done my own therapy. And I think any therapist, now, this is just my personal belief, but I will not go to a therapist who hasn't done their own therapy. And so one of my screening questions, if I'm looking for a therapist, is have you done your own work? And if the person's like not comfortable about talking about that, or they're not open to it, or they haven't, then I am not going to go see that person. Because I really think as therapists, we need to know what it's like not only to be on the other side of the chair, but to also make sure that none of our stuff is getting in the way. And we all have stuff. We all come from stuff. And, you know, I have sought out therapy, you know, throughout my life to make sure that my own stuff is not impacting my clients. So you know, that's something I recommend. You don't have to do that. For some people, that's not important to them. But personally, I want to go see someone who's actually done their own work. So those are kind of the big ones that I have for looking up therapists. And with children, I just want to mention quickly before I end that, you know, again, you want to make sure the person has experience working with children. You want to make sure that the person is going to be connected with their pediatrician if any issues arise. And I have, you know, a practice, you know, this is a guideline at my office that parents have to participate in the therapy with their kid. So, you know, even on my brick and mortar website, you will see that I put on there, you know, if a child is under 14, because in Pennsylvania, 14 and older, they can consent for their own mental health treatment. But, you know, really, you know, even if it's like maybe 12 or 13, it depends on the client, but definitely any child under 12, like their parent has to be active in their treatment. It can't be a place where you drop your kid off and you pick them back up and that you're not doing the work in between coming to the office, because we only get to see that child for, you know, 50 minutes a week, whereas you're with them all the time. So being active in the child's treatment, I think, is imperative. And if you're going to see a child therapist and they are not doing that, to me, that raises some big red flags. So you really want to make sure that you're included in those sessions. And I think it's also important that your child, though, feels like what they're talking about is still safe. So you don't want to put a therapist in the position of like having to tell you everything that the child's talking about, because then your child's not going to feel safe talking. But you do want to be like informed on any big things that are happening that you need to know about, and ways, you know, that you can be helping at home. And for adolescents, even though I know this can be really, really hard for parents, but it's almost like a little bit of the opposite, like you want to back off. So to me, if I'm working with someone that's 14 or older, the parent isn't going to know what that child is talking about to me unless they're in danger or hurting themselves or someone else. Otherwise, like everything's off limits because of the confidentiality. And I make sure the adolescent knows that in the state of Pennsylvania, they're 14, they can consent for their own treatment. And I'm not going to tell their parents unless they're in danger or hurting themselves or someone else. And I've had some parents very upset with me at times because they want to know, like, hey, you know, why didn't you tell me this about my, you know, and it's like, because, you know, if I really felt like it was life or death or an emergency, obviously, but if your adolescent child doesn't feel safe, they're not going to talk. They're not going to come in and share things. So it can be frustrating on the parental part, but it's super important. And so as a parent, if your adolescent who is 14 or older is going to see someone and they're telling you everything that your adolescent's saying, I would have a red flag on that too, because, you know, your adolescent should be able to have that privacy. And, you know, that can be really hard, but it's also super important. So as parents, you know, based on the age, it can be a very difficult thing. But trying to realize, like, okay, I think this therapist has our best interest at heart, that they know what they're doing, you know, that you feel like they're competent and that you're open to having discussion. And I'm just going to end on the fact that if you are going to therapy and you're not feeling comfortable with who you've been currently working with, and even if it's been a long time, it's okay to find someone else. It's okay to start over, you know, and really therapy, you know, shouldn't last forever. And it's hard, you know, it's hard for both parties. There are some people, you know, I've worked with for years and, you know, it's like, I would be very sad to see them go, but I also know that that has to happen at some point, you know, and that's okay. And some of my best sessions are when someone that I haven't seen in a couple years that I worked with for a long time calls me up and comes in and we do like a tune-up session, and it's like, boom, you know, they're back in the game again. And, you know, and I like that because I want people to feel like, hey, if anything happens down the road, I'm always here. But, you know, we also care about our clients and, you know, we do feel sad when that relationship ends. But, you know, it's okay if you're not getting what you need to start over. And for some people, that's really hard to do in person. You know, for some it's not, but, you know, it's okay to send an email or, you know, a phone call to say, you know, I just been thinking this isn't really working out for me. And sometimes it's no fault of either party. It's just not feeling like it's either moving forward or it doesn't feel like a good fit. You know, everyone isn't for everyone. And, you know, in the world of therapy, we have personalities in there. So it does become a little murky. It's not just like medicine where it's based on, you know, an illness, giving a pill, prescribing something. I mean, there's personalities in there and they have to flow and they have to work. And you want to absolutely feel safe and comfortable first and foremost, and feel like that person really gets you and wants to help you. Those are probably the most important things. So I hope this served you. If you have questions, you can always reach me out on Facebook or on IG at mama.shrink. And you can feel free to send me an email at drcynthia@mamashrink.com. And I will post in my show notes some of the places I mentioned. Psychology Today is a good resource to find therapists online. And always go back to your insurance if you're using insurance, you know, to see what they will cover. And again, I appreciate your time as always. And I hope that you engage in awesome self-care this week, mamas. And I will catch you next time. Take care. Thank you so much for listening, mamas. I really value your time. And if you like this episode, please share it with a friend and leave a review because they always help. If you want to learn more about me, just head on over to my website at drcynthiah.com. And you can find me on the socials at dr.cynthiahover. Until next week, please keep on taking care of you because life really is too short not to be happy.